Patrick Grant is to sewing what Paul Hollywood is to baking. A charming, smart, expert, passionate about a skill that sometimes, let's be honest, undervalued in modern life. The great British Sewing Bee is now in its seventh season. Patrick is a Scottish designer who took a leap of faith into fashion 15 years ago. With no experience, he took over the tailors Norton & Sons of Savile Row in London. And he's a world leader in sustainable clothing. That spills over into challenges for the amateur sewers competing for the title Best British Home Sewer. The new season of The Great British Sewing Bee is on TVNZ right now. And Patrick Grant joins me now. Hello.
Good morning, I guess, for you. good evening from sunny the United Kingdom.
Yeah, great. Nice to talk to you. Why does a person with no official fashion experience doing an MBA at Oxford mortgage everything to buy two struggling bespoke tailoring houses on Savile Row?
I don't know. It was a moment of some sort of madness, I guess. Yeah. But it was a very odd and slightly serendipitous moment that I found out it was for sale. And having been somebody for my whole entire life had been in love with clothes, and particularly in love with tailored clothes. My dad's wardrobe and my granddad's wardrobe was full of amazing, beautiful tailored clothes, which I wore when I was a teenager. You know, I couldn't believe that a real, genuine Savile Row Tailors was sort of there and up for sale. And I fell in love with it and took the plunge. But my mother thought it was completely balmy at the time. But luckily, my granny was a bit more supportive, and a few friends were too. So we got it together and got it started. And you know, I couldn't be more pleased that that's what I decided to do.
Yeah, obviously you saw something beyond the sort of the nostalgia of this 200-year-old company that had helped dress kings and prime ministers.
Well, I did. You know, I fell in love with the craftsmanship of the workshop. It was, you know, I went to visit them. As you say, I was at the time a student at Oxford doing a postgrad, and you know, I took the bus to London and turned up on Savile Row and walked into this workshop and you know, was just overwhelmed by the charm of the craftsmanship and the chatter in the workshop. And it's, you know, it's a very special place, Savile Row. And of course, as you mentioned, you know, the great and the good and the not so good of, you know, of famous and infamous men of the last 200 plus years have all, you know, walked down that pavement and had clothes made on that street. And, you know, you can kind of sense the history of it at every turn. And it's also such a charming and quaint kind of community of people. Everybody knows everybody else's business, and you know, the language of it and the camaraderie of it. You know, it's something completely special. And I really hope, obviously, right now there is a big, you know, there's a big change afoot in the way people dress, and there's also, you know, right now we're all struggling to get anywhere, and Savile Row is having a very, very hard time, and I really hope that it continues in its, you know, it finds a way to thrive in the 21st century as it has done for the last two centuries.
Is design something that you've always had an interest in?
Yeah, it is. I you know, when my schoolmates had kind of Bon Jovi posters on the wall, I'd been tearing pages out of Vogue and glue tacking those to my cubicle. I was at boarding school from the age of 14, and I was something of an oddity. You know, I didn't have sportsmen or rock stars on my wall. I had, you know, I had Helena Christensen and Christy Turlington, and I was, you know, fairly unusual in that respect at school. But weird enough, 2 years above me is another designer called Giles Deacon, who was very successful in the UK too. So there were just the two of us sort of quietly nodding at each other's trouser choices while everyone else was busy doing sport. But I was a sporty kid, but I just loved clothes.
Yeah, there was a time when you might have been the next Gavin Hastings, right?
Well, yeah, maybe. I got one cap as a junior. I got one cap at under 19 level for Scotland. I played one game against Wales. I did score a try, but we lost because our kicker had new boots on and he missed all his kicks. But yeah, I was in the squad for the under 18s and the under 19s, and I made the squad for the 21s, and then I got a shoulder injury and had to give it up. I mean, I don't think I didn't ever have any intention of being a, you know, going professional. In fact, weirdly, I think I played rugby in France for a year. I went to university for a year in France, and I played rugby there. And actually, there was a Kiwi who was a prop for Rugby Club Orléanaise, and it was the first time I'd ever seen anyone get paid to play rugby. This was in the very early 90s, before it was officially professional. But no, I never thought I'd be a rugby player. I mean, so a few of my contemporaries, I mean, Gregor Townsend sat on the bench with me for most of the under 19 season, and, you know, then went on to get, you know, score many tries and be multiply capped for Scotland, and is now the Scottish coach and doing very well as Scottish coach right now. I mean, Scotland rugby is having a great moment at this point. We just need to, you know, bring it all together and actually make it count at some point.
You mentioned your one cap. As someone with an eye for quality, what's your assessment of the jersey that you that you wore when you played that game?
Well, weirdly enough, so I run a business called Community Clothing now, which is effectively it's a social enterprise, and it makes clothes in 31 UK factories, and it's all about sustaining and creating jobs in the textile industry in the UK. Most of which is in areas of really high economic deprivation, areas that really, really need the jobs. So 6 years ago, I bought a struggling manufacturing business that was going to be closed down. And, you know, part of bringing that back to life was to start this business called Community Clothing that provides, you know, really regular work of really good, you know, good, well-designed product that we sell at a very affordable price. And one of the products we make there is a rugby shirt. And we make a rugby shirt that is based on the rugby shirts I wore in the mid to late 80s and early 90s. So it's pure cotton with a cotton tape, you know, the classic heavy cotton rugby shirt that we wore that, you know, you'd wear in a soaking wet day and it would come back weighing twice as much as it did when you went out in it. But it's made, you know, the jersey is knitted by this fantastic knitter called Roy, who has been knitting rugby jersey for about 30 years. And he's actually just moved his manufacturing facility to rugby. So it's a rugby jersey made in rugby. And it's sewn, cut and sewn in Blackburn. It's a fantastic quality product, but it's a throwback to the kind of... And that's the idea of everything that we do. It's all about making clothes that are made using materials that are not going to damage the planet. So, you know, we use sustainably farmed cotton. And made at a quality that just sort of doesn't really exist anywhere else anymore. The idea being that, you know, if you can make a piece of clothing last 20 years, its impact on the planet is going to be absolutely minimized. And so everything we do has that same level of integrity. So we make sweatshirts that are based on sort of 1970s, early 80s sweatshirts from people like Champion Sport when they made them really heavy. And you could, you know, they would sort of stand up by themselves and, you know, get better and better with age. Like, you wear them for 20 years just to kind of break them in. And we're trying to do everything at that level of quality and integrity. And it's, you know, again, it sort of harks back to my engineering background where, we're trying to engineer the product so that, it just really works. And it, you know, and you love wearing it because it feels like it just feels good.
Yeah, we sometimes talk about sustainable fashion on this show, and usually the bottom line is, hey, instead of buying that $10 t-shirt, you should spend $80 on a t-shirt and get one that's been made ethically and will last for you. But it sounds like with your community clothing, you're actually removing that dichotomy of cheap and crappy versus expensive and quality. You're doing it at a reasonably good price, I think.
We're trying to, and as we go along, as the manufacturers we work with get bigger, get more efficient, they can invest in, you know, more state-of-the-art technology for the manufacturing side, the prices will come down. But, you know, it's perfectly possible to make a t-shirt somewhere like the UK and make it and sell it at a good price if you've got state-of-the-art manufacturing businesses with the right technology and great staff and, you know, great management, and you do everything in a way that's really efficient. You know, it doesn't have to be made You know, there's actually not that much labor in some of these products. It's just that most of the factories in the kind of what we would call post-industrial world have had 30, 40 years of underinvestment and are sort of declining in volumes. If you took a Chinese factory and you dropped it into the UK and you staffed it at the same levels and you trained people the same way and you had all of the kind of up-to-date kit, you could actually make clothing that's fantastic, that supports jobs where you live and actually really lasts and gives people a great deal of enjoyment to wear. So I don't think you don't have to. It doesn't have to be bad just because it's inexpensive. But, you know, we're not there yet. You know, our prices, I think, are good. But our long-term aim is for every factory we work with to build, you know, to build a long-term, really sustainable business relationship with every single one of them so that they have the confidence to invest and we can all benefit from, you know, lower consumption, but of better quality products that sustain really good jobs, you know, in our communities. Because, you know, we will all benefit. We'll all benefit because the planet won't burn. And we will all benefit because we will live in communities where everybody has a job that they enjoy and people enjoy a good standard of living.
I'm talking to Scottish designer Patrick Grant. And so you're doing some pretty cool stuff on the ground there, Patrick. And then partly for fun, I presume, you're also on the Great British Sewing Bee. It's screening in New Zealand at the moment. It's very popular here. Can you tell people who haven't seen a bit about the show?
Well, each year we set about trying to find Britain's best amateur sewer. We set them a series of challenges. Each week is a different theme. Every week we test their ability to follow a pattern that we give them that they don't know anything about. We test their ability to turn something old into something new in a challenge we call the Transformation Challenge. And then the final challenge, they have to make a garment for a live model that they have had a chance to practice themselves at home, that they've chosen the pattern for and they've chosen the fabrics for. So each week we set them these three challenges. Every week somebody is awarded the garment of the week, and sadly every week somebody gets evicted. And at the end of the series, we end up with three fantastic finalists, one of whom will take home the exceptionally valuable prize that we make backstage using a bit of old cloth and a tiny little mannequin. This being the BBC, it's worth about £10.50, but highly coveted nonetheless. It's a fantastic honour. And as you say, I think you are watching our seventh series. I'm actually in Leeds in Yorkshire, the home of woolen textiles. We're filming the eighth series right now. Mm. We just started last week. So the show's been a fantastic success. I think so many people have loved watching the show, partly because I think, you know, there is a growing interest in how clothes are made and how we can make our clothes last longer and we can treat them better. But also it's just a really fun show. It's really warm. We love doing it. We Esme and I and Joe love working on the show. We have a great time making it. We have amazing contestants who inspire us and make us laugh and sometimes make us cry. And it is just a lot of fun.
Yeah. And it brings a nation together to watch it, I have to say, which is not unusual. The Sewing Bee has quite a long history of bringing people together in times of trouble, doesn't it?
Well, it does. There were sewing bees held during the Second World War at Buckingham Palace. The Queen Mum, Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mother, held sewing bees where all the Buckingham Palace staff got together to sew for the war effort. So there is a long history. I mean, it's interesting. You mentioned the sense of togetherness that it brings, because it used to be that, you know, there were lots of things that we would do as communities that would bring us together. I mean, I think, you know, in our industry, there was a long tradition of communities getting together to harvest flax, to make linen from. There were long traditions of people finishing the cloth together. So once they'd been woven, they would get together to kind of knead it. They'd sing songs. They'd do all these fantastic communal activities. And sewing together is something that people used to do quite a lot of. You know, I think we miss a lot of these opportunities to get together as communities and just be with one another and engage in some sort of meaningful work. And it is a very bonding activity. And I think anybody who watches the show will see how much the contestants enjoy spending time with one another. They're all from very different backgrounds, different ages, different ethnicities, religions, and everything. But they all share this love of the craft, and it brings them together in a lovely way. And we've been very fortunate. I mean, we didn't very deliberately set out to create this kind of atmosphere on the show, but it's always been a really warm show. It's, you know, it is a competition, but you know, you can't stop the contestants from helping one another out. You know, they'll stop doing their own project to go and help somebody else fix something that they don't know what to do. We're like, get back to your own area. This is a competition. But you know, I think we miss these things in modern life where we are physically disconnected from one another. We're doing so many things like we are now via kind of digital media. Those opportunities to get together and share common activity within communities is something that I think we need to try and do more of. We've been growing flax in Blackburn. We did this project where we're home growing and home spinning our own textiles to make some clothes from this year. And, you know, we've had loads of volunteers from the local community coming down to what was a derelict bit of land in Blackburn. We grew and we harvested flax. And it was lovely. You know, the volunteers would all come down together on a Friday, and either they were sowing or weeding or pulling the flax when we finally pulled it a few weeks ago. They've also all, you know, many of them have learned how to spin and weave and plant dye. And it's been a fantastic opportunity that, you know, to bring people together. And it, you know, there was a real warmth and lovely kind of camaraderie amongst everyone that turned up. And I think Sewing Bee, you know, you see it with knitting circles, you see it with quilting clubs, all of these kind of things are just lovely opportunities for people to spend time with one another. And I think particularly in the UK last year, you know, in fact, earlier this year and last year, we went out during lockdown. We've, like you guys, the show went out during a period when everybody was kind of stuck indoors. And actually, I think everybody watching it really enjoyed it. You know, it did bring families together. And again, we have lots of parents who watch the show with their kids. It's a really, you know, it's very child friendly, despite some of the smutty puns that occasionally come up. It is. There's a warmth to it that I think people particularly responded to during COVID.
Yeah, and you pitched in, used all the resources you had to make PPE. I was so sorry to hear that your father had died of COVID early in the pandemic.
Thank you.
Does that give the work extra meaning for you, I wonder?
Yeah, of course it does. I mean, I was involved in a couple of big projects last year. I mean, firstly, our own manufacturing business switched over to making PPE. We did it very, very quickly. You know, we went from sewing very expensive clothes to making surgical scrubs in about 3.5 days. And, you know, throughout the pandemic, we were involved in projects making surgical gowns, scrubs, reusable face masks, disposable face masks. But I also ran a big project called the Big Community Sew, which was a huge community sewing effort to make reusable face masks. You know, when the UK government finally decided that face masks were a good idea, you know, there was a big shortage of them in the UK. And obviously, you know, the most sustainable way of dealing with that was to make reusable, washable masks. And we got literally hundreds of thousands of volunteers all across the UK, some in big groups, some in little groups, some individuals living at home. Anyone with a sewing machine was kind of encouraged to cut up some old pillowcases or duvet covers and make reusable masks for their friends and neighbors, check in on their neighbors, check that everybody had it. And it was a lovely opportunity for people to make new friends and create connections during the pandemic, particularly for a lot of elderly people who maybe were stuck at home alone. They were getting together over phone calls and occasionally, you know, via video messaging to kind of meet other sewers locally and kind of share tips and patterns. And you know, there were people picking up and delivering masks all throughout the communities, all, you know, on a voluntary basis. And for many people, it gave them a sense of purpose at a time where they were feeling a little bit lost. And it also gave them, you know, a social group that, you know, that they could interact with at a time when a lot of people were feeling pretty lonely.
Just out of interest, is there an item of clothing of your father's that that remains special to you?
There are quite a few, but I still have a dinner suit of his that it was made in the 1930s. So I suspect he either bought it secondhand or he must have got it from his own, you know, from a relative of his own.
Incredible.
But I still wear it occasionally. It's a shawl-collared three-piece. It actually has two waistcoats, a white one and a black one. But yeah, it's a phenomenal thing. It's pretty heavy, so I have a lighter weight dinner suit that I wear more often. But it's pretty bomb-proof. So if you know you're going for a big night that might end up a bit raucous, what we call a combat suit over here. It's built to withstand anything you might throw at it. But it's, yeah, I love it. And I've got various pieces of my dad's and pieces of my granddad's that really have, you know, a great deal of meaning to me. I think old clothes collect stories, you know, as you wear them and as other people wear them, they kind of collect stories and they become more valuable, I think, with time. Again, you know, the more you repair it, I think the more valuable it becomes. And I think a lot of people today have never quite, you know, have never enjoyed that feeling of wearing something that has real meaning to them, because so many clothes these days are pretty disposable and you know, just don't get better with age. There's a few things I have. I still occasionally wear his ties. There are things, you know, it's lovely. I feel very connected to him through the clothes that he left behind.
The Great British Sewing Bee is on Friday nights at 8:30 p.m. on TVNZ1, and episodes are also available on TVNZ On Demand. Patrick Grant, thanks for being so generous with your time. I've really enjoyed chatting to you. Keep up the great work.
My pleasure. Thank you.